Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent co-host, Richard Grove. And Rich, good morning.
Good morning, Maria. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's freezing cold here, but otherwise I'm doing okay.
It's actually pretty warm up here in Connecticut. I'd say it's in the 50s probably. It's not too cold. I got the window open here.
Oh, good for you. We don't have any windows open here. It's like 32 degrees out right now. Rich, we haven't talked for a while. We haven't talked since the latest stolen election. And I guess a lot of people were disappointed and a lot of people were happy.
Well, I was surprised by the election results. I thought for sure Hillary Clinton was going to win. Not because of the mainstream media and all these polls telling everybody that she had a 98% chance of winning and Trump didn't have a chance, but just because of my familiarity with the power structure and how this all works out there. And from my perspective, like I sat as an observer, an independent observer, if you will, because I didn't vote for either one of the candidates. I didn't vote for the third party. I don't see how there's any connection between my vote and what actually goes on as far as how the decisions that the people that run this country actually make. There's the Princeton oligarchy study that backs up my opinion that there's no connection between my will and what this country does. And so I've sat by for the last 12 years because I don't think I've voted since 2004. 2004, I voted for Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian candidate. But that only lasted one election. After that, I was all set with voting. I really grew up and realized that my will is not allowed to participate in the bigger picture. And like Mark Twain said, if your vote made any difference as far as freedom goes, they wouldn't let you do it. So I was surprised that they had Trump win, but I really see it as a right foot, left foot. If you're going to look at the paradigms of right and left, think of them as feet, and they're both connected to the same body, progressing toward the same agenda. And I think maybe the Hillary camp, the left, if you will, was just trying to reach globalism and a new world order a little bit too fast for some of the people that are espousing those ideas. And they wanted to, you know, get people back on their heels again, thinking that, oh, you've got this billionaire who actually, you know, he represents your interests and he's going to drain the swamp and all these other things. And so I think it's, we're dealing with psychological warfare out there. Anytime you see anything in mainstream media or politics in general out there, if it's not your local election for your town, it's too big for you to have any say in. And at first I got a kick out of how upset everybody was that, oh, Hillary didn't win and all this stuff. But then I saw all the, you know, there's violence and kind of these hate crime things going on both sides. And in some cases, these are being artificially constructed. In some cases, they're just cases of ignorance. I don't like to see people get hurt anytime, no matter what their beliefs are. Unless they're trying to take away my freedom, I really don't have a problem with what other people think. I'm not seeking to be their authority. I just want to be left alone, and I want those who won't leave us alone to, you know, to go away. They're not going to, though. Ignoring these people doesn't stop them from trying to take away our rights. And that's kind of why I do what I do every day, is because I realize that just wanting freedom for myself and my family isn't enough when you're surrounded by a bunch of people who are on stimulus response and their actions are not of their own thoughts. They're reactions to a very well-orchestrated plan of psychological warfare.
Right. Well, you know, at the beginning, I couldn't understand why the powers that be would slip it over to Trump instead of Hillary. And I was perplexed. But watching what he's loading his cabinet with, Koch brothers, Goldman Sachs, Rothschild bankers, It just seems like they picked the real dummy so that they can just put their own people right in place, right in front of our faces, from the guy who was going to drain the swamp.
Well, it always seemed through Trump's history. I mean, you can't do all the things that he's done like just by himself. He's not a man operating in a vacuum. It always seemed like he's a front man for a bunch of other financiers and real estate moguls that stay in the background, and he's kind of like the point man, and he draws the attention, he does the public relations, he puts his names on the buildings, he's good at getting, you know, free media coverage from saying audacious things and, you know, things that really draw people's attention and make them think, this sort of things. So he's a clever impresario out there. I think that's what the whole Apprentice TV show was about. Like, he, you know, here's a guy who's famous for firing people who ran fake companies, right?
Right.
And so, you know, he went bankrupt back in the early 90s. He had to sell his yacht, the Trump Princess, to this guy who's a Saudi prince named Prince Al-Walid bin Talal. And then recently, like, he's having a Twitter war with this guy. I'm like, this guy, they've done business before for a long time. So there's a lot more perspectives and a lot more angles to this than what actually makes it through to most people who put a Trump sign in their yard. And the people that put a Trump sign in their yard, I don't think these are, like, racist people or anything like that. I think they're people that recognize that there was corruption in D.C. in general. It's bipartisan corruption. And they wanted to change. And because they were shown certain limited perspectives to say, hey, here's the guy who can actually offer you guys what you want. I mean, I don't think it's the first time people have been sold, like, like an untrue bill of goods. I think that the American schooling system has been creating generation after generation of people who are more and more likely to buy something and not get what they paid for.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you look at everybody's reaction to this. I mean, this broke up families. It broke up friendships. And then, you know, you have all these other people who I believe have a right to be angry because of all the positions that he's, you know, mentioned during his 18 months of campaigning, you know, against LGBT, against women's rights, health rights, you know, minorities, you know, deportation. I mean, he's gotten everybody super scared. And yet, you know, looking at how he's loading his cabinet, it sure looks pretty bad for most of those groups. So in a way, I really can't blame them, but I don't even know what the solution is.
Well, I mean, let's peel back some of what you just said there, because there's a lot of interesting things that you just alluded to. First off, there's this whole notion that if there's this thing called the Ring of Power, if we just give it to the right group of people, they'll use it for good things. Mm. And I don't think that's true. I think that power in its nature, power as opposed to love, like, power involves deception. And if not, it would just be like friendship and caring, and we're just doing the right thing to do the right thing. Power has a whole different nature, and the people who run countries have power. People who print money from nothing have power. And people who own aircraft carriers and drones and satellites and these sort of things, they have power. And what do they use that power for? When you can't reason with them, when they lose the argument and they are intellectually bankrupt, guess what? Here comes the violence. Here comes the water cannons. Here comes the drones. Here comes the smart bombs, you know? So there's all these like nefarious uses of the nature of power that are just completely off everyone's radar. Then there's the aspect that the Clintons and the Trumps were friends, man. Like, the Clintons were at the wedding of Trump and his new wife, I don't know, back in 2005, 2006. And I like to every now and then just send around this little meme that says, hey, a lot of people are losing their friends over this whole Trump-Clinton thing. Guess who's not going to stop being friends? The people in power. You know, I really think that Trump cut a deal. I mean, he's a master negotiator, right? He cut a deal with Hillary and said, I'm going to take the presidency and we're going to leave you out of prison. How do you feel about that? And she's like, okay, I'll cancel my fireworks. So I don't think that it had anything. I'm sure there's a lot of people who voted for change. I'm just saying I don't think those votes actually had anything to do with the outcome we were shown on TV. I watched the election coverage that night. I started watching on Fox. I got a little suspicious. I said, let's go to the Clinton News Network and see what they're saying. I was even more suspicious. I'm like, all these people look like they're like deer in the headlights. They don't know what's going on. So I don't know if they were all good actors or if they were legitimately surprised or what, but I don't think it really had anything to do with people actually like punching a card or pulling a lever and those things actually being counted. Because if you want to look at voter fraud, it's like it's all over the place. It's the nature of the machines they make. It's the nature of the process with all this ambiguity in it. And if that fails, then there's always the Electoral College with people from your state that you don't know, that you didn't vote for, that get appointed by the people in power already. It's like I looked at the Electoral College for Connecticut, and they're all appointed by Democratic Governor Daniel Malloy. They're all like people who contributed to his campaign and stuff. So I'm like, how crooked is all of this? So even, you know, that's why I stopped voting 12 years ago, and I participate in it as a spectator. I try to, you know, help other people not get hurt by it and not get like too wrapped up in it, and help them to try to, you know, keep it real about the whole process. But there's also, you indicated about how so many people were scared by the fact that Trump won and stuff like that. I'd say that, you know, maybe Trump and his words and actions have something to do with that. But I'd say most definitely, if you actually ask these people why are they scared, they heard it through MSNBC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Huffington Post, all these mainstream media outlets that were going to these off-the-record Clinton meetings, according to the Podesta WikiLeaks emails, going to these meetings, and their job was to scare people about this. Oh, you know, it's not going to be the status quo winning this election. People be scared. And then people take that fear and they run with it because they don't know what else to do.
Right.
And so there's a lot, there's many, many layers to this. There's nuances, and people want to all paint it like it's just black and white, like Trump's bad, Clinton good, or vice versa. And neither one of those is an accurate statement when you compare it to objective reality.
Exactly. Well, you know, I gave up and I busted free of the two-party system, which is a one party of the rich, many years ago. But once again, we see, and I think this election has made people more aware of how their vote doesn't count, because he's the minority elect. They found out, ooh, like it was a big surprise that there's an electoral college, and people found out about these, what do they call them, superdelegates. So I think a lot was exposed since I covered the stolen election of 2000.
Yeah, I mean, there was a stolen election of 2000. Then I think it was 2004 where that guy, Clint Curtis, who was a programmer for the voting machines. There's this famous testimony. If you just go onto the YouTube, type in Clint Curtis, C-L-I-N-T-C-U-R-T-I-S, plus voter fraud, you'll see 100 different videos that it's, you know, it's various snippets of his testimony. And he basically says, like, there is no integrity to the programming that actually works behind the scenes in these voting machines. And that's just one layer of it. But that gives people enough pause to say, look, you know, why is there no integrity in our elections? Well, maybe that's on purpose, because it's like, can't we just have an iPhone app or some sort of piece of software where everyone who has connection to the internet could vote and we would all have direct representation without any electoral college? Like, I've said this for years and years and years, because it's kind of a provocative thing to say, because people say, well, there'd be crime. People would rig it, blah, 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 blah. Exactly. So what's our real problem? We have corruption. We have predators. We have people whose interest it is to take away our freedom, because you know what? That gives them power. So unless we're going to actually deal with the problems at hand, we're just going to endow these to the next generation and next generation and the next generation. Once upon a time, we could all meet under the apple tree in the middle of town, and we could stick our hand up and be individually counted. But that's long, long time ago since we had any type of direct representation. And the reason that we don't have it today, even though we have the technology, is because we have criminals, we have predators, we have, you know, crime going on, and we have not yet learned how to insulate and isolate ourselves from that, such as to preserve our freedom and liberty. And thus, we are easily tricked into giving up our freedom and liberty for this illusory thing called security. And security is something that is peddled by people who want to steal your power.
Well, no argument out of me. And I'm glad you mentioned Clint Curtis, because I have my interview that I did with him, you know, right after the stolen election, right on my front page this week.
And you're one of the few. I mean, very few people even know who Clint Curtis is, or have gone through the trouble to ask him some questions and preserve it for future generations, as you have.
Well, thanks, Rich. I mean, like I always say, I always thought that covering the stolen election of 2000 was going to be the biggest story I'd ever cover. But the hits just keep on coming. When you look at some of the picks that he's putting in office, I mean, it gets scarier every day. And I'm wondering what happens to the Trump voter when they realize that nothing he promised them is going to happen. Do we get riots in the streets?
Well, I think the first hint of it was when he said, you know, in October, whenever during those debates, he's like, oh, I'd assign a special prosecutor and I'd put you in jail and all that stuff. And then in November, it's like, oh, no, the Clintons are nice people. I wouldn't want to hurt them. Now, he might be just saying, because the argument from the Trump supporter side is he's, you know, mixing politics with the Justice Department is wrong. Obama has done that. Trump doesn't want to do that. Trump's going to play nice till he gets in office. Then the Justice Department's going to do what they do and investigator anyway. All these different, I don't know. It hasn't happened yet. So I'm not going to predict the future because I see what kind of trouble that gets people into. Mm-hmm. But I know that if he meant that these people were nice people and he's not going to have an investigation, then he really should have said that in October, instead of using his words to lure people into voting for him because they thought they were going to prosecute Hillary, because there's an enormous mountain of crimes and hypocrisy, as noted by James Comey, who's a Clinton friend. He was on the board of directors of Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation. HSBC is one of the multi-century drug money laundering banks in the world. It's like one of the biggest companies in the United Kingdom. If you just check out like the history of HSBC, there's opium, there's money laundering, there's cocaine. He was on the board of that. The board and HSBC donated $81 million to the Clinton Foundation, okay? And then he's the investigator over the Clinton emails. I mean, there's conflicts of interest just piling up right there. No one says a word in the mainstream media about that. And Comey wasn't an FBI agent who worked his way to the top of running that place. He's a lawyer who got set on top of that place. You don't get set on top of a institution like the FBI unless you're serving the people who use the FBI for their purposes, and we think it's to investigate crimes. That's not what it's about. So there's all these other nuances, again, to how the world actually works, and people misunderstand that. So getting back to your question about the Trump cabinet, yeah, it's pretty disturbing, right? Wow. When are people going to realize that? It's like when you drain the swamp, you find swamp monsters under the swamp, and he's not looking to get rid of them. He's like, hey, let me get these people who are like servants of Henry Kissinger. I'm going to put these people in here. Let me get some of these people from Goldman Sachs over here. Let me get these neocon guys from over here. Let me get this guy who ran the CIA for the Clinton family. He did good covering up. James Woolsey is his name. He's a Rhodes Scholar, so he's in the accreditation of the Cecil Rhodes secret plan to take over America and make it part of the British Empire. Let's bring him in over here. And, you know, so he's not like choosing a bunch of people for his cabinet that are likewise like, let's drain this swamp, Donald. He's picking like the swamp monsters. He's like, oh, here we go, you know. And so, like, again, I didn't buy into the fact that he was going to drain any swamp because I don't really think he had the power or, I don't know, the wherewithal, the background knowledge on the situation to actually do that. Otherwise, you'd be picking people that you've never heard of that have been working quietly in their state against fraud and all sorts of criminal enterprises and corruption and struggling, and now he's going to give them a place where they actually have resources to do that. That is not what happens. Right. It's not what's happening right now. Now, he might be just, you know, throwing all these names out and doing all this stuff and then fire all these people and hire new people once he gets in. Like, he might be participating in the psychological warfare that's being thrown at him. But when you're, like, sitting with Romney, and you're like, hey, guy who hates me, allegedly, according to the mainstream media, let's have dinner together and see how we can work together. It's like, I don't know. It's like, but, again, I'm a spectator on the sidelines. I'm not somebody who has any skin in the game with the Democrats or the Republicans, and I kind of believe that the whole thing is illegitimate to the point that when people have rights and privileges that aren't endowed to the individuals that are on the other end, like, we all have a limit to our rights and privileges insofar as we can't do anything that takes away other people's rights and privileges. That's freedom. When you have the ability to push a button and, like, exterminate people on any given part of this planet from drones or satellites or nuclear missiles or whatever, those are superpowers that I don't think should be endowed to any human being, right? When you have the ability to put someone in a cage for a multiple life sentence plus hundreds of millions of dollars in fines for a nonviolent crime, I don't have the right to do that. Do you have the right to do that? How did these people get the rights to do that? I have a lot of questions about how the world works, and I haven't gotten very good answers yet, except for people who want to say, here's violence to answer the question.
Right, you know? Right. Well, I know, I'm sure you're aware of what's going on in Standing Rock. And it's interesting to me that no one, not Obama, not Clinton, not Trump, have anything to say about it, while the Native Americans there, the water protesters, are getting slaughtered.
Well, I mean, I've watched this develop over the past, whatever, 6 weeks that it's gone on, at least. It seems like it's gone on longer than that. And at first, it's a standoff, and then there's, you know, increased police force, and then there's rubber bullets, and then it's below freezing, and they're using fire hoses to make human icicles. And now there's reports that these people are being sprayed overnight with some sort of chemical agent. I don't know. Like, that would sound crazy to me if I didn't know the history of Agent Orange used against people in Vietnam, right? So it's like, to what length are these corporations willing to use these police, these militarized police forces to engage with these individuals? Because that's what you have there. You have individuals and their individual rights, and then you have these other people who have war machines and war tactics being used on American soil, and the fact that they don't even get the irony that they're beating up on Native Americans during Thanksgiving.
Right.
I mean, let alone before and after that, but come on. It's like, there's such an absence in reason, an absence in notions of recalling history and how we all got here, and the fact that they claim authority in the name of these pieces of paper that said, hey, we're all equal here, and we're all treated as individuals, we all have this Bill of Rights and whatever, but somewhere along the line, these people on one side of the line, they get militarized force and all these new technical weapons. And these other people basically have words and social networks and cameras. And I've seen more than one person, you know, not shooting a gun, shooting video, who gets shot by somebody shooting a gun. Now, that's not equal and opposing forces right there. That's gangsterism. And the fact that, there's people in power on both sides that have heavy investments in those companies that want to use the pipeline, that wants to go through, a burial ground / cemetery. When it's like, if you won't let a pipeline go through Arlington Cemetery, then why do you want to put a pipeline through these people's cemetery? If you won't, let these corporations take over your water supply, why is it okay for these corporations to take over these people's water supply? And I think it's just people. So Orwell talked about it as doublethink or doublespeak, and it's the ability to hold contradictory or opposing views in your mind at the same time. And he was really pointing it out as a form of mental illness. But today, it's like a prerequisite for being as part of the establishment, And I don't think that adjusting to an abnormal environment is a healthy thing. I think it's right for people to resist the abnormality of it and to call out the hypocrisy of it and to bring notice to it. I mean, that's the First Amendment right there. And if the First Amendment doesn't work, then in the past, people have used the Second Amendment to defend their lives and their rights and their freedoms. And that's how we became America in the first place. So people who want to take away the First or Second or any of the amendments, it's like, wait a minute, you're on the third floor trying to destroy the basement to this building. You're going to come down with it. Your pseudo-authority that you think you have that gives you the moral and intellectual high ground is going to evaporate when you try to pull out the foundations of what made this country different from every other tyranny on the planet.
Well said. And then you have to also look at how the supposed media, mainstream media, basically is ignoring the story. You barely see anything about Standing Rock. If you do, it's just a little ticker going across the bottom of the screen.
Well, that's because they don't want to draw attention to it. It's like, so when you have mainstream media and all their ability, like if they could use it to propagandize people to their goals or their agenda, they certainly would. They touch a lot of other subjects they shouldn't touch because they're like, oh, we have an angle on this and we can make these people look like, stupid idiots. And therefore, they can brainwash anyone who believes that into coming over onto the side of the status quo, which is using force in the absence of logic and reason. Like, if it was really a good idea to put this pipeline through this land, they would just use logic and reason. They wouldn't use water cannons and armored personnel carriers and armed drones and rubber bullets that really... I mean, the one woman lost her arm.
Right.
There was a Native American girl, I think she was 11 or 13, who got shot and died. So, these are not things you do when you can win the argument using logic and reason in the arena of public opinion. These are things you do. These are tactics people resort to when they're intellectually bankrupt and want what they want anyway. And that's not a sign of health. That's not a sign of freedom. That's a sign of sickness. And I think the fact that the mainstream media stays back and doesn't really give it any coverage is a sign that they're like, yeah, we want that sickness because it makes them more powerful. And there we get back to the concept of power. What is it? It's not. It's pretty much the opposite of love, you know?
Well, that's,
so what is that?
Right. Well, I can't disagree. And, you know, you look at the situation and it's really an oil war on our land. So all these wars for oil that we do all over the world, we're now doing right there in North Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, it's more and more hypocrisy. Oh. If we can cover any of these subjects that doesn't involve hypocrisy and intellectual bankruptcy, you know, that'd be great.
Rich, we're going to go to a short break. When we get back, let's talk about what you've been up to. I know you're working on a new book. You're working on a film. So stay with us, Rich, and I'll be right back.
She's been called Paula Revere, the mother of the internet and even a legend. The mouth that roars all truth without any input from corporate, religious, or political affiliations. Rhea's in it just like you are. Often imitated, but never duplicated. Commercial-free talk providing a real education in a world filled with lies, cover-ups, and propaganda. Subscribe now and encourage your friends to do the same. Feel good about supporting real media that supports you and all life on this planet. Pick a subscription of your choice and get started on the journey down the rabbit hole. If you are financially challenged or a senior on a limited income, please send an email to maria@maria.net and she will work something out for you. There's never been a more dangerous or exciting time to be alive. Education is a necessity now. Stay informed. Subscribe today at www.meria.net.
Okay, welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent co-host, one of the smartest people on the planet, no doubt. Richard Grove, if you're not familiar with Richard's work, get over to tragedyandhope.com. I have a live link here. And Rich, I know you're working on a book, The Truth About the Rothschilds, and since they're now, you know, openly running our country, how far have you gotten with the book?
I think I was actually further along with the book before the election happened than I am now, because so much more information has come out. Like, for instance, like the week before the election, the Economist was saying, you know, we don't, this is a tweet, this is an article, this is what they were espousing to the public. They're like, we don't have a vote in next week's election, but if we did, we'd vote for Hillary. Not because she's a woman, but based on her merits. And I was like, really? Is there any place that you guys are going to disclose that, you know, Lynn Forrester de Rothschild's her name, and she married Sir Evelyn de Rothschild of the British Rothschild family, and they are owners of the Economist magazine. She, Lynn has an editorial management position where she oversees this. So is there any place that they're going to disclose that the people who are printing this magazine and telling you this message actually groomed Hillary for her campaign run, actually held, you know, $100,000 a plate dinners for Hillary in New York, according to the Wall Street Journal, as well as the WikiLeaks Podesta emails. Mm. And speaking of those emails, there's emails in there titled, the subject would be, Miss You, from Lynn de Rothschild to Hillary Clinton, and it's signed XOXO. These are not business relationship-y type of emails. These are close friend, mentor, apprentice type of relationship emails. And I was just kind of like, well, at first I was glad I hadn't gone to print yet, because I was like, I got a whole new first chapter here. Right. Because the questions I started the book out with were, you know, you hear a lot of conspiracy theories on the internet about the Rothschilds. So first, are they an actual banking family? Do they exist? And if so, what type of influence do they have today? Because if they existed hundreds of years ago and they're not still doing anything, there's no reason to write a book. And when I had started writing the book, it was all about this movement that the Rothschilds had, and they had Prince Charles and a bunch of other powerful people, IMF, World Bank, on board with it. It was called inclusive capitalism, because the Rothschilds saw that greed and avarice and these poorly developed cultural forces were destroying America's freedom. So the richest people in the world, the people who owned like one-third of the world's investment wealth, got together and said, how shall we help to make sure that greed doesn't ruin the world? Oh, by taking it over. Let's do globalism and take everything over. So this is where I started with them. Like, these are people who have a plan. They have the means. They have an agenda. They have the working groups. They are chipping and chipping and chipping away at national sovereignty, at intellectual sovereignty, intellectual and individual sovereignty, like your right to own your own body. They want the right to say collectivism rules, that the individual doesn't have any rights, and this is very much what led to tens and tens and tens of millions of people being exterminated during the Soviet Union and the communist Chinese experiment under Mao Zedong. So only people who are ignorant of history can believe in these things. Unfortunately, we're not taught in American schools about these social experiments that were funded by the robber barons, funded by the Rothschilds, funded by the Rockefellers, and the various groups that are seeking to have power in the absence of you actually determining your own life or having self-reliance or having real self-esteem. They have figured out if they can get you to stop being self-reliant, you become dependent on the welfare state. If they can get you to stop being self-reliant, they can control your self-esteem because you then need money to buy things to make you feel good. And this is part of the conspicuous consumption, the corruption of the capitalistic culture. It's no longer capitalism as it was once upon a time. It's cartel capitalism. These are not legitimately run businesses to, you know, do fair exchange with you. You give some money, you get a good product or service. They're actually using it to entrap individuals and to deny you your freedom. And not only just you, but your family, your friends, everybody who comes before and after you is part of this. And so there's this whole, not even dichotomy, it's this whole movement through history. It's the downfall of freedom and liberty and the rise of despotism and tyranny. And you can see this in like minuscule examples in the Nazi regime or the Soviet regime or the Chinese communist regime. But what they're about to do is take all those little experiments and everything they learned about controlling people, add a whole bunch of new technology, and make that permanent for everybody on the planet forever. Because they're going to have autonomous robots, autonomous drones. And once they have a technological proxy force between the powers that be, i.e. the 0.0001% with all the wealth and power, and the rest of us, we're going to be treated very much like cattle on a ranch. Now, a cattle rancher might have 100,000 head of cattle, but there's only a couple people running that ranch. That's what they want to do to humanity. And I think that's blasphemous. I don't think that's why the universe created humans as a species. I don't think that's why we're here. I don't think we're supposed to be slaves. I think we will continue to be enslaved by these ideas and these technologies and this violence and this irrationality until we use our cognitive skills and learn and outgrow that status quo.
Well, I can't argue that. And I also know you're working on a film, The Future of Freedom, and I'm glad to see that your Indiegogo fundraiser, since the last time you were on the show, raised 200% of your goal, which is great, which means there are people out there that want the truth, that want you to do this work. But when you talk about the future of freedom and we see most of our freedoms getting slaughtered, what is the future of freedom?
Well, I saw that the future of freedom was like dying a terrible death if we don't do something about it. So the reason that I created the Indiegogo fundraiser, which I launched back in September, I think I actually announced it on your show the day that I was setting it up. The reason I did that is I needed to publish this book, and I needed some resources to do that, and I needed some resources to continue my film series, The Future of Freedom, where I'm going around interviewing people who are experts on U.S. foreign policy, whistleblowers from the intelligence establishment, NSA whistleblower William Binney is one that I did for this project. Another one is a whistleblower from the Justice Department, John Loftus. I also interviewed CIA, you know, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern on the trip to D.C. that I made in October. So, like most of my fundraisers, I asked for about half of what I actually needed to get all this stuff done because I'm always afraid of failure and asking for too much money to actually get these projects done, which is actually the amount of money you need to get it done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not received in the social media sphere. So I gave a low ball, you know, I need this much money. And thankfully, because I offer a good quid pro quo, I offer good perks in exchange for your hard-earned dollars. That way it's a win-win for everybody. People continue to, I got a couple donations this morning, you know, $30 or $60 at a time. People want the book. People want access to the interviews. People want the perks. So I'm continuing, to raise on that fundraiser, which is great because part of what happened when we were in D.C., filming, we filmed 6 interviews while we were down there. And during the last interview, we left our hotel room where we had done the first 5 interviews, and I went to see an author in Washington, D.C. on Connecticut Avenue, Connecticut Boulevard, whatever that is, in Northwest section. He's got kidney failure, but he's a very famous author in the realm of U.S. foreign policy. His name's William Blum, B-L-U-M. He's written books like America's Deadliest Export, Democracy, or the CIA, A Forgotten History, or Killing Hope. And these are books that document all the U.S. foreign interventions, coups, assassinations that we've done on other nations around the world since World War II. Bill Blum is advanced in age. He was undergoing kidney failure. He's waiting for a transplant. So we went to his apartment to interview him. We got a great interview with him. And when we came back out, having only taken the minimum of equipment into his tiny apartment that we needed, we found out that our rental van had been broken into, and that between me and another director who had equipment and that we had done these interviews together, we lost about $10,000 of equipment.
Oh, God.
Right? And that's like an unplanned, unscheduled, unbudgeted.
Right.
We just did all this work, and now we're in the hole.
Brother.
And didn't really have, didn't have production insurance and made a bunch of rookie mistakes because, you know, we're not running professional companies. We're just activists who are saying, look, somebody needs to get these guys on tape, and someone needs to do it with quality gear and good lighting and good audio and preserve what someone like William Blum has learned over the last 40 years and offer it up to history, make sure it's there in the future so people can learn from it.
Right.
So we got robbed, and that was kind of a downer, and I'm still trying to, purchase back the equipment that I lost because some of it I use on my show downstairs for the deep end. Specifically the microphones I use on the set down there got stolen. So it's like I'm slowly but surely trying to also, raise a little money to replace that equipment while not compromising the book or the film project that I'm working on. So it's always a mixed bag when you're trying to get stuff like this done. It could have been worse. They could have stolen the entire vehicle. They could have stolen all of our stuff. They could have stolen all the footage.
Right.
As it stands, they just got a couple camera angles, And I don't think that the criminals that took the stuff were doing it because of what we were doing. I think that there's a crime problem in D.C. It was a bright, sunny Sunday afternoon in a part of town where it didn't look like there were shady people walking around that would break into your car and rob you. But obviously, they do that down there. People have drug problems. There's all sorts of things going on in the big world out there. And we were a little naive. I don't think we weren't careful enough. I mean, but we got robbed.
All right.
So, That was just, icing on the cake. We still have the cake.
Right. Well, I'm glad you got to interview William. Years ago I interviewed him. I still have that interview in my archives on Killing Hope. And I am, and I get he does a really lengthy email blast, too, probably once a month. And I think he's another
treasure. The anti-empire report, he calls it?
Yeah, an anti-empire. Exactly. But, you're never going to see people like him, Ray McGovern, the people that you and I have interviewed. They're not going to get any coverage on mainstream media. All mainstream media does is repeat the same lies all over, all day. It's just, it's so crazy to me to watch mainstream media on TV at the gym because I know how much real news is happening and then I watch how little of it they cover.
Well, and what you would see of Ray McGovern is going to be a shorter sample taken out of context. And what I try to do is offer a forum wherein these candidates can speak freely, speak openly, and in their entirety. And then I release those interviews as I make the film. I release the entire interview so you can see here's, several hours with Ray McGovern. 10 minutes might make it into the film, not because I'm trying to censor what he says, but because the film and the nature of making documentary films or even a film series like I'm making means there's a lot left on the cutting room floor, which is why I released the interviews in their entirety. Bill Binney, I think that was a 2.5-hour interview. The John Loftus interview, that's like upwards between 4 and 5 hours of content. And I think that's another reason that I do get support, on my future Freedom Project and other projects that I've done, is because I'm not just going to make you wait 3 years for the end result documentary. You get to see it as it's being made. As I get better equipment or replace equipment, you can see and hear, and if I, get LED lights so people aren't sweating as much because I'm not pointing, thousands of watts of, incandescent light at them, these improvements slowly make it out there, and the audience is demanding and appreciating a higher level of quality than what most other people are able to focus their energies on and get done. It took me, I don't know, 7 years to save up all the money for the equipment that I lost within, 4 minutes. I don't know how long the break-in took. We were in there interviewing Bill for like an hour and a half. I'm pretty sure they stole all that stuff in a couple minutes. They didn't spend a long time at the car.
Right.
So, as I've been able to, exceed the goal on that Indiegogo, I'm just putting whatever extra money goes into that Future Freedom fundraiser toward the replacement of the equipment that I lost. And then I'll continue filming interviews over the next year.
Well, how can people find your Indiegogo fundraiser? Do you have that listed on your site?
Well, if you go to tragedyandhope.com, I think the first two articles at the top of the page are for the Rothschild book. You'll see a guy riding a turtle. That's Lord Rothschild. He's the same guy to whom the Balfour Declaration was addressed, in, 15 years after that photo was taken. The photo on the front is Lord Rothschild riding a giant tortoise, leading it around with a piece of lettuce. And I use that as the example of this is how the bankers rule the world. They hang some lettuce out there in front of people, and the tortoise or the world follows where that lettuce goes. You can also just go to Indiegogo.com and search the Future of Freedom. And then I think that's the only project that's named like that. And I can also send you a link if people are interested. I do appreciate any help I can get with both the project and replacing that equipment.
Absolutely. The other thing I did want to mention, when you were interviewing, some of our prized patriots, as far as I'm concerned, on the Future of Freedom, did they have suggestions of how we can get our freedoms back?
Well, some of the observations that they're readily bringing to light through the interview is that this could not happen if we had a sharper, clearer, truer sense of our history. So right now we're living in an era where history is being changed day by day. They're deleting stuff off the web and putting new stuff out and acting like that other stuff didn't exist. They think we don't know how to use the Wayback Machine on the Internet Archive. They think we don't know how to read books and preserve books and actually, do these sorts of things. They're taking all the great books out of our libraries. They're selling them, burning them, throwing them away. They don't want people to have access to history because that makes us much harder to control as a population. They don't want us thinking for ourselves and actually being truly educated on what interests us. They want us being schooled on the limited perspectives that helps them more easily manage us. So it'd be just like if you're a rancher and you had 100,000 head of cattle, if all those cattle had their own individual cattle agendas, it'd be pretty hard to keep them fenced up and control them.
Right.
But when you can get them all to herd together and think the same and show up for the water or follow the food or act this way to the dogs or the cowboys, you see how big a steer is and you see how flimsy those fences are.
Right.
But you give it a little shock, oh, it keeps them in, right? So they use, the same way they manage animals and livestock, they manage human beings. A little bit of pain, a little bit of work, you're not going to go there. You're going to go through the path of least resistance. And that's how they control people. It's not by forcing people to do X, Y, Z. They just say, we're going to make all these other things hard. Here's the thing that's easy to do. And like water running downhill in the lowest point, you're going to follow the path of least resistance unless you know that's being used to control you. And then you'll say, I'm willing to put in more energy, time, focus, attention to escape that.
Exactly.
So unlike water, we're not doomed to always take the path of least resistance. We can actually go uphill. We can reverse our path. We can go over here to the right or to the left. But only if you're smart enough to know that that path of least resistance, that trench, is being dug so that we can end up in the place where they want us to end up, which is tyranny and despotism, where the powerful people have an unlimited monopoly and nobody to challenge them. And these are the stories that are told by Aldous Huxley in Brave New World or George Orwell in 1984 or Ray Bradbury in Fahrenheit 451.
Mm-hmm.
And those are called dystopia stories for a reason.
Right.
And on the flip side, people who offer you utopia, like, hey, you guys just sit home. I'm going to go drain the swamp. I'm going to go do all this hard work.
Right.
Washington literally, here's the joke. Washington literally is built on a swamp. Georgetown was a swamp. It's the last place you would want to build a civilization. There was a lot of work that went into that place. Guess who did all that stuff? Not us. You ever go down and look at those buildings? You ever see human beings have buildings like that? The Capitol building, the monuments and stuff like that?
Of course not.
Those are all signs of collectivism.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure, you know, the Freemasons had a big role in that, too. So, you know, when you really look at D.C., you talk about it as a swamp. It truly is a swamp. And, you know, when you get one man coming out and saying, I can fix this, I can do this, you know, like I'm your new Messiah. You know, I'm seeing some religious people saying that Trump is like the second coming of Jesus. He speaks for all and like all 12 disciples. I mean, crazy stuff, Rich. And I said, the only disciple he reminds me of is Judas. But that's another thing. You know, the people that use the Bible as their defense have never read it. So it's very easy to slap them down because, unfortunately, I read it. Do you know what I mean? So you look at these people that claim to be Christian, you know, just like I told you before the show, I've been to San Diego last weekend. The amount of homeless seems to have doubled since I was there a few months before. And we call ourselves a Christian nation. Well, I'm not saying the Christian part of it.
Well, and I also don't think that it's a, you know, it's not very Christian to consider yourself the ruler of others and to make decisions on their behalf and to speak for them when you don't know them and to make claims to that end. So I guess maybe one of the fundamental problems is, like, we are indoctrinated into various religions before we're ever taught about the history of philosophy, the practical use of philosophy, the relation of philosophy and finding truth to our individual freedom, the ability to use logic and reason, the ability to identify fallacious and fallacy and deceptive arguments, right? And there's a reason that, the indoctrination and the ideology comes in before the education on how to actually find truth, right? Mm-hmm. And so I notice that, I observe that, it continues generation after generation. There's patterns of cultural deception where parents lie to their children and say, you know, Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, any of these things. It's like, right. How does that, you think it makes things more fun. Really what it does is it ruins your relationship as far as, I consider the only legitimate form of government on the planet to be the parent relationship with a child until a child's old enough to be self-reliant and smart enough to be self-reliant. Like there is a place where you have to protect people because there are predators in this world, there are dangers in this world, and people with more experience should watch out for the people with lesser experience. However, the way the world is set up right now, the most powerful people prey on the youngest and oldest among us. They don't go after the strong. Well, they take the strongest people, and they're like, hey, why don't you join the military and go over here and get some Agent Orange or get some depleted uranium or get these vaccines so you can have Gulf War syndrome or PTSD because you find out that you're killing women and children, not for your country's defense, but actually for the industrialization and colonization that's been going on for hundreds of years. To maintain a monopoly on the opium empire as the British East India Company and the British Empire handed over to the United States. I mean, when I sat down with Bill Bloom and we're talking about his books, and I said, has it come to your awareness that all these different foreign interventions, those aren't U.S. interests that we did this stuff for. It's the continuity of a British Empire agenda where they had a monopoly on the black markets, the opium, the arms dealing, the subversion of indigenous cultures in order to take their resources, to have saltpeter for their gunpowder, all the things that they needed to maintain an ever-growing army. Mm. And he's like, no. And so, like, it's nice to be able to sit with somebody who's done such a great body of work and offer them perspectives to be like, look, there's a bigger picture here. It's not because people in the United States are bad people. Yes, there's bad people all over the place. There's bad people all over the world, right? And we don't have a monopoly on that. But there was an agenda that was ongoing, that was collapsing under its own weight, and then through World War I and World War II, all of a sudden that agenda is over here and it's rebranded as American hegemony. So there's, instead of looking at it as we are spectators to this history, we're only spectators until we learn enough to be like, yeah, I actually see where I can put some energy and attention into this game that's going on, a very real game where people's lives are being lost in horrific ways that are at the other end of our tax dollars. So when you extort money from people and you take that theft and you say, that's not theft, that's taxation, and it goes to the government, and the government does evil things with it, and, bombs a hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, with Doctors Without Borders, where there's no military combatants over there, and it's just innocent people trying to rehab, or do the same thing a year later in Aleppo, Syria, where they bombed hospitals and there's no military combatants. It's like, how did that happen? Did Obama just have the money, like, out of his own pocket? No, he used our money. Right. As taxpayers. And because they only take a little bit from everybody, that makes it not so bad. No, it makes us all accomplices. And those of us who sit around and do nothing while this evil is perpetrated are actually the ones who are enabling it. So I think that's why you get up and do what you do every day. It's certainly why I get up and do what I do every day. And I think we are making a difference, albeit, you know, none of us are going to be the end-all, be-all solution to this, nor would I want to be.
Right.
I would just like to influence the people who bring about the solutions, because I know I can't do it all myself, and neither can you.
No, absolutely not. But I see so many people just walking away because it's so involved. Listen, this is like, it takes up your whole life, and I don't have to tell you that, because I don't know anybody that works as hard as you do to put the truth out there and educate people.
The way I look at it is, if we quit, like, it's doing the same thing. It's like, people are like, oh, well, you know, I got threats or I got pressured. It's like, guess what? Your family's eating GMOs. Your family's being exposed to poisoned water.
Right.
It's all being done to us already. You have no, there's really no other choice but to participate in this and to resist it.
I have to agree. And I mean, look at the spraying in the skies. You know, I have an article, I think it was off The Guardian, about them finding nanoparticles in people's lungs. They're, you know, of course, blaming it on carbon in the air. But I immediately thought about, you know, the interview I did with David Icke when he said they're putting nano dust into these chemtrails. And now they're finding such an accumulation in pretty much everybody that has Alzheimer's disease. You know, I thought about that thunderstorm asthma, which is a new made-up disease, I'm sure, that is killing people in Australia, people that never had asthma before. And I'm like, what did they put in the chemtrails? Because people are so ignorant, and they still want to argue when they can clearly just look up and see that they're being sprayed every day like roaches. So how else but active today?
Yeah, I mean, I'd just like to take a step back and just look at it as the generality of, instead of making sure that people are free and have healthy food and water and have their own rights to property and own their own bodies, they're willing to let people be slaves, let people get sick and starve to death and lose their private property and be slaves in order to build things like CERN, or in order to go to the moon or go to Mars or any of these other things that are extravagant. It's like, wait a minute. It's like, when I was a kid, it's like, if you're going to go outside and play, you got to do your homework first.
Right.
And I see this CERN or the space program or any of these other things that are kind of frivolous and very, very, very expensive and suck up an immense amount of intellectual capacity as far as cognitive ability to solving these problems and a whole bunch of resources that could go other places, right? And if we all had a vote on it, I don't think we'd vote for CERN. What is that? How many billions or trillions of dollars have they spent on that? And what's the purpose of it? And why are we all so convinced that's a good idea when you got these people over here? We got veterans in this country that are homeless, that don't have food, that don't have medical treatment. But we can spend these billions and trillions of dollars. We can have the Department of Defense losing trillions of dollars in a quarter last year. I think it was, you know, it was like $6.5 trillion
right,
unaccounted for, meaning it's missing. If your car is unaccounted for, where's your car? You don't know. It's gone. Someone else has it.
Right.
It's not where you left it. So we're okay with all these things, but so that's kind of the thing. It's like, people are tolerant of, you know, all these extravagances, people out there playing without doing their homework first. And it's like, I know that's an adolescent metaphor, but it's an accurate description of what's going on.
Right.
There's extravagant amounts of money being spent on projects that have nothing to do with freedom,
mm-hmm.
nothing to do with cognitive liberty, nothing to do with actually reaching the capacity of human beingness. And instead, we're willing to sacrifice that through very inhumane methods. I mean, even just look at the nature of nuclear weapons themselves. People
right.
are like, oh, well, we had to develop those, otherwise the Nazis would have. Okay, great. When there was VE Day and we beat the Nazis in Europe, why did we keep developing them? Oh, because we had to beat Japan, otherwise we would have lost more. Okay, well, that's not a valid reason either.
Right.
And these people wanted to make these weapons of mass destruction. They didn't just plan on making one or two. They set up Oak Ridge and Los Alamos and these other places to build thousands of them. They were built for power, not peace.
Exactly.
Right? And so we need to actually look at what's going on, where our tax dollars go. If you're going to get up and go to work every day, and they're going to take one-third of what you make every year and apply it to an evil agenda, then maybe you should reconsider how you spend your time, energy, and attention, because we're all participating in that. That's one of the reasons I stopped working in the corporate world. you know, if I'm going to go out there and make several hundred thousand dollars a year and a large chunk of that money is going to go to all these things that I abhor,
right,
maybe I shouldn't spend my time like that. Maybe there's another reason I'm on this planet. Maybe there's other things that I could do with my life's energy during its short span and duration on this planet to make a little bit of difference. Maybe, even if it's not a difference, to inspire somebody else to be the change that they want to see in the world.
Well, that's one of the biggest differences I think any of us can do. Rich, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and I'm looking forward to our next show.
Well, thank you so much, Maria, and I want to thank everybody who's out there listening because you're the change.
Absolutely. Take good care. Talk soon. Richard Grove, check out his work, tragedyandhope.com. He's got a world of education there on site. And thanks for supporting my show, and I'll see you guys tomorrow when I'm back with news of Planet of the Apes.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.